Srila Prabhupada ki, Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki, Nithai Gaur Premanandi. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Jnana Timidandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadamaiham Dadati Svapadantikam Namaum Vishnu Padaya Krishna Pristhaya Bhutale Shrimate Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namine Namaste Sarasvati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Deshatadine Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadha Shiva Sadi Gaura Bhaktivinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Good evening. So we'll be reading from Srimad Bhagavad Gita, Chapter 2, which is called Contents of the Gita Summarized, Text Number 40.
Neha bikrama nasosti pratyavaya na vidyate svalpam api asya dharmasya tayate mahato bhayat.
Translation and purport by His Divine Grace Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Translation: in this endeavor, there is no loss or diminution, and a little advancement on this path can protect one from the most dangerous type of fear. Purport: activity in Krishna consciousness, or acting for the benefit of Krishna without expectation of sense gratification, is the highest transcendental quality of work. Even a small beginning of such activity finds no impediment, nor can that small beginning be lost at any stage. Any work begun on the material plane has to be completed, otherwise the whole attempt becomes a failure. But any work begun in Krishna consciousness has a permanent effect, even though not finished. The performer of such work is therefore not at a loss, even if his work in Krishna consciousness is incomplete. 1% done in Krishna consciousness bears permanent results, so that the next beginning is from the point of 2%. Whereas in material activity, without 100% success, there is no profit. Ajamil performed his duty on some percentage of Krishna consciousness, but the result he enjoyed at the end was 100% by the grace of the Lord. There is a nice verse in this connection to Srimad Bhagavatam. If someone gives up his occupational duties and works in Krishna consciousness, and then falls down on account of not completing his work, what loss is there on his part? And what can one gain if one performs his material activities perfectly? Or as the Christians say, what profit a man if he gains the whole world yet suffers the loss of his eternal soul? Material activity and their results end with the body, but work in Krishna consciousness carries a person again to Krishna consciousness, even after the loss of the body. At least one is sure to have a chance in the next life of being born again as a human being, either in the family of a great cultured Brahmana or in a rich aristocratic family that will give one a further chance for elevation. That is the unique quality of work done in Krishna consciousness. So this is a really wonderful verse. It's actually one of my favorite verses in the Bhagavad Gita. And the reason it's one of my favorite verses is because it gives us hope. You know, as I interact with students at Columbia University, New York University, because that's I live in New York, and a lot of people that are not born Hindus, people of Western faith traditions will come and talk to me exploring Eastern spirituality. And I ask them, you know, why did you want to come in this direction? Why are you exploring here? And one answer that I get that's quite common, not always, but one question, a comment that I get is that people are tired of thinking that they only have one life and it's either heaven or hell. That means there's no room, there's no forgiveness involved, there's no compassion. If you mess up a few times in this life, you're done for. You're going to hell. And for how long? Forever. There's no break, there's no halftime, it's just non-stop, constant. So people just don't like, that does not sound like a very compassionate spiritual path. That does not sound like a very compassionate God. So this is a kind of a complaint people have towards some of the Abrahamic understanding, the Western faith tradition, that we only get one chance. And so when I ask them, so what do you think about reincarnation? Then they're like, well, I'm kind of open to it. You know, I mean, they have to be. If they don't want to, if they, either you get to live once or you get to live many times. So they kind of like the option that if you kind of mess up, you screw something up, which we will for sure, 100%, right? To err is human. At least you get a chance again to perfect yourself. You have a chance. And what's beautiful here is that it's explained that whatever amount of spiritual development you achieve in this life, whatever amount of Krishna consciousness you achieve in this life, and let's say you don't achieve that perfect stage, in your next life, you'll have a chance to pick up exactly where you left off. So Prabhupada here explains that if you finish off at 1%, you will start at 2. That's kind of satisfying. Imagine, just imagine this. You know, you're about to die and you have millions of dollars in properties and assets and investments, and you're guaranteed that in your next life you'll be able to reclaim all of that. You'd die very peacefully. The world would die much more peacefully in that way. Unless, of course, if you're dying with debt. You know. But the world would die more peacefully thinking, okay, well, you know, I'll get all my money back. I won't have to work so hard again. It's just all going to be sitting there waiting for me. But unfortunately, it doesn't work that way. Because material possessions can't be transferred. It would be way too much work to figure out where you take birth again. So, but how is this transferred? How is your spiritual consciousness transferred to your next life? It's really, really important. Because spiritual development, spiritual advancement is connected to the soul and not the body. Material assets, material gains and properties and things like that, they're connected to your physical body and your legal name. So when your body dies, and if you don't have a will in place, it's gone. Right? It's all gone. But who we are is the soul. That is what's affected when we become more spiritually advanced. So the more we understand we're not the body, the more we purify our heart and mind of greed and envy and selfish desire and anger and pride, to the degree we purify our mind and heart of these tendencies, to that exact elevation will take birth again. So let's say we removed 30% of these, of all of envy and all of greed and all of pride that we harbor in our heart. By the end of this life, if somehow, if you could put numbers to it, let's say you were 30% clean. So in the next life, you will start at that 31% because the soul, that advancement is connected to the soul. It's not connected to the body, but because the soul is affected by it, the body is also affected by it. So to the degree, it's explained that right now we're kind of walking in a dreamlike state. We're sleeping. We're not fully aware of who we are. So we're all sleepwalking. How does that feel to know that you're sleepwalking? That when you're going to get in your car, you're going to be sleepwalking while driving home. When you go to work, you'll be sleepwalking while you go to work. So the Bhagavad Gita and the Vedic tradition suggest that we are, to some degree or another, sleepwalking because we're not fully aware of who we are and what our purpose in life is. A lot of times when I do a lot of discussions using the movie The Matrix and the Bhagavad Gita and making the comparison. And I ask people, so what is the thing that drives you? There's a nice line in the movie. It says it's the question that drives us. So I ask people, what's the question that's driving you in your life? And most times people say, trying to figure out what I'm supposed to do here in this world. What is my purpose? Why am I here? So this is the biggest thing. We're trying to understand why we're here. And because we're asleep, we can't figure that out. So Krishna consciousness helps us become awakened to who we are. And once we understand who we are, then we can clearly understand what our purpose in life is. Like if you've never seen a microphone before, ever, you won't know what to do with it. You won't know that it amplifies your voice so everyone else can hear. So in order to use something properly, you can use it for something else. You can use it to hit somebody on the head. Maybe you think it's a door stopper. Who knows? Right? And so unless you know what something is, you can't really utilize it properly. So until we know who we are at the core, beyond the body, we won't really know what to do with ourselves. We'll do this, we'll have this job, and we'll have that job, we'll be dissatisfied with that one, then we'll switch to another career, and then this, we'll move cities, we'll move towns, we'll all this kind of stuff. All our life, we'll just be doing this, not really knowing who we are. So the advancement that we make as souls stays with us life after life after life until we reach that 100% and we no longer are trapped by the cycle of birth and death. And what proof do we have that our advancement actually carries over? Because you can't look that up. You can't Google that. There's no way to look that up. There's no database. So how do you know? I would like to suggest that the fact that we're sitting here today in a very spiritual environment is proof, at least for me, that we did something in our previous life that gave us the privilege of coming back into an environment where there's so many people looking to transcend the cycle of birth and death. That's how I feel. The fact that we're here today, we started in a previous life. Maybe we started 2-3 lives ago. Maybe we started 30-40 lives ago and it's taken us this long to come to this point. Maybe that's what's happened. So for me, this is the proof. There's how many tens of millions of people in Los Angeles and how many people are here right now? So I think that's something unique and precious, and I think it's a privilege that we are actually here. And I think that's a sign of that this was our desire in our previous life to continue to make spiritual advancement. And that desire is being fulfilled in this life. And to whatever degree we achieve in this life, in the next life, we'll be able to continue where we left off. There's a really nice story in the Bhagavad Purana and the Srimad Bhagavatam that explains to us how we can actually continue in the next life, depending on what our consciousness is. So some of you, maybe a lot of you are familiar with the story of Bharat Maharaj. He was actually the king of the world. And it's a really amazing story. It's kind of tragic, but it's very, very telling, and you can learn a lot from it. He was a king of the world, and at one point he decided that he'd lived a full and complete life. I mean, king of the world, I mean, that's pretty much as big as it gets, right? So he'd achieved everything. He'd done his duty as a king. He provided, you know, sufficiently for his kingdom and for his people, the people he was ruling. And he decided that in his old age now, he's going to retire from his kingdom, give it up to his sons, and walk into the forest and focus solely on the goal of understanding who God is and how to develop a relationship with Krishna, with God. He made that his sole focus in life, and he decided to walk away from his kingdom. And what's interesting is when he goes into the forest, and the reason he went to the forest is he wanted to be free of all the distractions of a kingdom. I mean, we have a home, maybe with a couple of family members living there, and that's distracting. You know, you make some plans and someone else changes your plans. And there's so much going on, so much on TV and in the movies and here and there and the beach and so many different things that can distract us. He was ruling a kingdom, and his kingdom was the whole planet. So you can imagine how distracting that is. You can imagine if you can even get any sleep at night. And he decided to go away from the distractions, go into the forest, free of distractions, and just focus on God. Just meditate on God. He gets there, and he achieves a very high level. Basically, he gets to like 95% of his spiritual advancement. 5 more percent and he's done. At the time of his death, he would not have to come back to the world cycle of birth and death. He would go to the spiritual world. But something interesting happens. Not too far away, there was a stream. And he saw a deer being chased by a lion. And this deer was pregnant. So even in the forest, there's distractions. You know, there's distractions everywhere in this world. There's no such thing as a place in Hari without distractions. So there he sees, this is like, you know, you have to watch Discovery Channel for that. He was seeing this live. This was happening in front of him. There's a lion chasing a deer. And the deer, she's pregnant. She jumps over the stream to escape the lion. And in her panic and in that act of jumping, she gives birth. Her baby falls into the water. She lands on the other side. And just seeing what had happened and that exhaustion, she kind of dies. And then Bharat Maharaj, the king, who's trying to get away from it all, get away from all of his attachments and all of his distractions, he sees this baby deer, this helpless baby deer, struggling for its life. And he thought, well, I have to save the deer. It's my duty. I have to be compassionate and I have to save the deer. He went and saved the deer, this baby deer. Naturally, the baby deer thought, well, this is mommy. This man's my mommy. Right? So the deer doesn't leave him. And what gradually starts happening is he becomes attached to this deer. Like if anybody has a pet, you know, you get attached to that pet that's following you around everywhere. It's like a baby. And the deer becomes attached to him. And there's this incredible attachment. And what's happening is now he's sitting and meditating, thinking about God, and the deer starts jumping on his lap, jumping on his back. The deer wants to play. Right? Anybody have a puppy? You know that puppies always like to play. Right? They just want to play. Like any little, I mean, you know, even adults, we like to play. We just get too serious about life and we stop playing. But babies and puppies, all they like to play. So he's trying to meditate. He's trying to pray. And this deer keeps jumping on him and playing him with him and, you know, distracting. And he needs food and he becomes basically completely distracted. Eventually what happens is he gives up all of his meditation practice and just focuses on the deer. Over time, he realizes, oh, this deer really needs me. I got to protect the deer. There's so many wild animals out there. And if I don't take care of it, who's going to take care of it? It's my duty. And he stops, gradually he stops meditating and praying. And his entire focus goes on the deer. Isn't it interesting how here was a king. He left a kingdom, which means unlimited wealth, unlimited followers, unlimited control and power. You walk, you stand, and everybody in the assembly stands. You walk down the road, everybody bows down, offers respects. You snap your finger, and 10 servants come running to ask what you need. That's the lifestyle he had become accustomed to. All the absolute power of the planet. He left all that behind. Think about it. He left all that behind to come closer to God. And he got distracted by a deer. A deer took him away from the very thing he had set out to accomplish. And that is the incredible nature of this material world. And what ultimately happens in the story is when at one point he gets old, he's about to die. Well, the deer runs off somewhere. He can't find the deer for a long time. So he gets kind of sick inside because he misses the deer so much. He just can't just imagine if you like kind of like lost your child or something, you'd kind of go crazy looking for it. He also went kind of crazy looking for it. Eventually, it became so bad. He was getting older and he was about to die. And he died thinking about the deer. And the Bhagavad Gita says, whatever one thinks of at the time of death, that state one will achieve. So he had achieved so much He left, voluntarily left behind his attachments simply to get attached to a deer. Now, we're not suggesting that he should have let the deer die. There was many ways he could have handled it. Save it and let it go or something. So we're not suggesting a lack of compassion. Compassion can be demonstrated in many ways. You don't have to like disrupt your whole life for something like that. And it's explained in the Bhagavatam that he ultimately in his next life, because he kept was thinking of the deer when he died, he became a deer. And his whole life, he had to live like a deer. But he was able to remember his previous life as a king who had gone to the forest. He could remember that. That was God's mercy, that he could remember that I'd made this mistake of getting attached to a deer, not letting the deer go at one point. And because of that, I'm like this. So then what he would do is he would just basically stay around the great sages. He would just stick to the sages as a deer, just hearing them chanting, hearing them meditating and praying. And he just wanted to make sure that he doesn't make any more mistakes, any more attachments. But see, that's the nature of this world. Is we don't know how or why exactly he got attached to that deer. There's a couple of possible reasons. One is, maybe there were some attachments from a previous life that he hadn't fully gotten rid of, or even from this life. Maybe there were some attachments lingering. And the moment that attachment came by, he jumped on it. And we all have attachments in our heart. We all have things that we're stuck to in this world. And a lot of us may be not willing to admit that I'm attached to this or I'm attached to that. Maybe some of us are attached to money. Maybe some of us are attached to power. Maybe some of us are attached to fame and recognition. We don't know. We have a ton of attachments. Maybe he had some attachment that all of a sudden this deer brought out to the surface. Maybe he had committed an offense to another devotee. Maybe he had committed an offense to someone. And that offense came back to him in the form of this attachment and caused him to live another couple of lives. He was this close to home. Imagine you're about to get home after a long time and you take the wrong exit. And it's one of those exits like going from here to like Nevada or something. It's like, you know, you can't turn around for like a long time. So it's something like that. And that attachment came back possibly because he had offended somebody. And so another beautiful lesson is that to be careful in how we interact with others, how we speak to others, all others, within a spiritual community and outside of a spiritual community. If we're offensive in our speech, offensive in our behavior, judgmental in our speech and behavior, these are all offenses. And these offenses come back to haunt us. And we don't know when they'll come back to get us. Look at him. He reached like the 95% stage. He needed a little bit more to graduate from this body, from this world. But this one thing came and pulled him back away. And of course, our teachers, our previous acharyas, our previous teachers explain that one reason that he made this mistake of just getting so attached to the deer was that he didn't have any other companionship that could warn him. Said, okay, it was good that you saved the deer. That was a very good deed. But now it's time to let the deer run wild and you get back to your meditation. He had nobody there to tell him. He was alone. And so therefore, practicing spirituality alone is not really recommended. Because your mind can be your worst enemy. And the Bhagavad Gita says our mind can become our best friend or our worst enemy. And whether we want to admit it or not, right now our mind is kind of our worst enemy. How many times does our mind make our life miserable? A situation isn't so bad, but the mind will just kind of like magnify it. Maybe somebody said something minor, and we made that thing like it's World War, Cold War starting now with this person. The mind misinterprets, it misunderstands, it's just looking for a fight. That's the nature of our mind. It's just looking for a fight. And with this kind of mind, you know, you can't be trusted to be alone with this mind. How many times has our mind made us do something that we've regretted? Anybody raise your hand? Just me? Okay, I'm the only one. Oh, thanks. Feeling bad then, like I better. That's kind of scary. So, and how many times have we gone into something knowing we did it before and knowing that the outcome was negative, we suffered because of that negative outcome, we face the same choice now again, and we do it again. That happened to anyone? Okay, yeah. It's common, right? Our mind is crazy. I like to think of the mind as like your roommate that doesn't shut up. You've got a crazy roommate. You didn't get any references, you just let the mind move in. Yeah, come right on in. No problem. You know, here's the fridge, help yourself to anything you want. You can do anything you want. You know, throw a party whenever you want. Doesn't really matter. And we're living with a crazy roommate who just won't shut up and who makes our life miserable. So when we practice spirituality by ourselves, then it's a little risky because we just don't know what our mind will convince us of. And it can distract us, like Bharat was distracted. Bharat Maharaj became distracted because of a deer. If he had some devotee or some spiritual companionship who could guide him, prevent him from going deeper and deeper into that attachment, he could have graduated right away. He had to come back two more times, actually. After the deer, he came back into a very spiritual family, and at the end of that life, he was liberated. But it took him two more lives. It's like senior year of college, and you like screw up and you have to come back two more years. Kind of what happened to him, but two lifetimes, that's a long time. So wherever we finish off, as the verse was saying, that's where we'll begin. So it's so important that we prepare our consciousness in such a way that at the time of death, that we're able to think of God. And at the time of death, we can be surrounded by people who are also close to God and who can fix our consciousness in such a way that we don't start thinking about all kinds of other crazy things. Because at that time, your mind's going crazier than it ever did before, because now you're like immobile. You know you're about to die. You're taking in your last few breaths. It's a very scary time for the body and mind. The soul has to leave this body after living in it for 70, 80 years. You know, we live in an apartment for a year or two and you get attached to the apartment. What about an apartment like this? You've lived it for 80 years. Yeah. You know, and you're going to be kicked out of it and not allowed to take any of your possessions with you. Right? You're going to have to vacate and leave everything behind in that apartment. Everything. So that's a very difficult time. And so the mind can become very unstable in that situation. Unless we've trained it throughout our life to constantly pray and meditate and try to come closer to God. And, you know, just by coming into an association like this, it happens naturally. Because, you know how if we surround ourselves by certain kind of individuals, we start thinking and behaving like them, that's kind of normal. So your environment affects your consciousness, right? We can agree with that. So if you're just around a bunch of individuals who are trying to grow spiritually, who are trying to develop spiritually, just by being around them is really powerful. Like if you're trying to become vegetarian and all your friends are like carnivores, you know, and make fun of you for being like eating rabbit food, it's hard. I remember when I was trying to become vegetarian, I was working as a loan officer in a mortgage company in New Jersey. And I was trying to become vegetarian because I was trying to become Krishna conscious. And my colleagues were like, hey, so what are you going to eat? Rabbit food today? I'm like, no, there's a little bit more than just salads for vegetarians, you know. So it can be challenging. But if you're around others who are trying to live cleaner and more conscious lives, then it becomes that much easier. Because ultimately, like I'm mentioning here, or like the Bhagavad Gita is mentioning, in this endeavor, there is no loss. Whatever advancement you make, if this is your first time here and you never come back, you made a certain amount of advancement today that will stay with you in your next life. When I'm not saying that don't come back. I'm saying please come back and make another little more advancement. And this also doesn't mean that just because it'll continue in the next life that, man, well, you know, I'll just wait till my next life. I got plenty of time. This tradition gives me as many lifetimes as I want. I'll just come back a little later. Right now I'm going to go do what I want to do. No, that's also not what we're saying. We're saying that because, you see, Bharat was distracted by a deer, we don't know what will pull us away. Let's not wait for something to pull us away. Let's use our free will to come into this kind of an environment, be around others who are trying to progress spiritually, and develop our relationship with Krishna, relationship with God. Because ultimately, that's the only relationship that's going to satisfy us. When all of our other relationships fall away, and relationships in this world are so temporary, they come and go, that will be one relationship that will keep us always grounded, no matter how difficult life gets. Even if there's a storm, major storm that comes in our life, if we're deeply rooted and grounded in our spirituality, a tree that's deeply rooted, if a storm comes, it may lose its leaves, but it will keep standing. You may lose a little bit of your hair because if things get difficult, but you'll remain standing. And that's the most important thing, because then you live to fight another day. So, this is the reason that this verse, especially, I always like this verse a lot because it gave me hope that I may not make it in this life, may not develop all the qualities needed to be again with Krishna, but then wherever I finish, I'll be able to continue in that, with that same progress. So, what I'd like to do now is, well, I have a little more time. Okay. There's another beautiful story in here about Ajamil, right? I'm going to read this section of the purport. It says, Ajamil performed his duty in some percentage of Krishna consciousness, but the result he enjoyed at the end was 100% by the grace of the Lord. So it doesn't explain what the story of Ajamil is. It's a beautiful story. Ajamil was born in a family of priests who were all very dedicated and devoted to worshiping God. What happened one day, as he was running some chores, he was walking through a foresty area, he saw a man and a prostitute engaging with each other in an inappropriate way. I guess there's no really appropriate way to engage with a prostitute, but you know, you get the picture. So they were together, and he saw that with his eyes, and his mind became contaminated. And when he went back, he couldn't stop thinking about that prostitute. He became very attached to her in his mind. And eventually, he was married, but eventually he was so infatuated by her that he went back to her. And he started living with her. And he left his wife. He was living this incredible life of purity and worship and dedication to God. But one view, just like Bharat, seeing the deer, one thing, one impression in the mind can corrupt us like this. One impression can take us down the wrong road. It's so delicate, our mind. We're so delicate. So, he gives up everything and moves in with that prostitute, has kids with her and everything. And at the end of his life, he's about to die. He became old, he's about to die. And what he sees is something very scary. He sees the servants, the messengers of Yamaraj. Yamaraj is the god of death. So Yamaraj sent his messengers and say that this man has lived a very negative life, committing lots of inappropriate acts and inappropriate behavior. Bring his soul to me. He will reside with me. So, very scary looking messengers went to Ajamil, and they're about to snatch him from his body to take him down. As he's seeing them, he gets really scared. And he calls out the name of his youngest son. He had named his youngest son Narayan, which is another name for Krishna. And when he called out Narayan, he called out to his son. He wasn't trying to call out to God, he was calling out to his little son. Immediately, Vishnu, Krishna, sent his messengers. They go protect him. He's calling my name. So, what's interesting, and then the messengers of Vishnu protected Ajamil and sent the messengers of death away. It says, no, because he called out the name of the Supreme Lord, he will be protected. You cannot take him. And this is really amazing, because even though it was unintentional, but because earlier in his life, he had lived a life of devotion and dedication, that Krishna was looking for some excuse to save him. And all he had to do was call out the name of Narayan, even though he's not calling out to God. And Krishna said, well, anyways, it is my name. I'm going to go protect him. So, even a little bit of advancement. And how do we make advancement? In many, many ways. There's not just one way to make advancement. There's many ways. Believe it or not, you're all making advancement just by sitting here today. You're making more advancement by looking at the deities. You'll make more advancement when you go take prasad and eat. That's, of course, the best way to make advancement for a lot. That's easiest. Right? That's like the easiest, something we can commit to every week. No problem. You make advancement by chanting in kirtan and dancing in kirtan, the devotional singing. Or if you decide that every day you want to chant on beads, the Hare Krishna mantra, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Ram, 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 Hare Hare. If you decide that every day you want to take 5, 10 minutes, 20 minutes to chant on the beads, you make even more advancement. And if you decide that now I want to come and do some service here at the temple, I want to go help serve out the food, I want to help clean the temple, I want to do some service, you make even more advancement. So there's so many ways. You can pick one, you can pick many. And whatever advancement you make, that will stay with you till you die. And if you don't go back to God in this life, all of that, the things that you did in your devotional life to purify your heart and mind, all that purity will be with you when you enter the womb of your next mother and you take birth again into this world. So there is absolutely no loss or diminution, and even a little advancement can protect one from the most dangerous type of fear, and the most dangerous type of fear is losing the human form of life. So, these are the messages I wanted to share with you all. That, a little recap, that even a little advancement, whatever you do, will stay with you forever. And that even a little tiny thing in this world can distract us from our spiritual life. So being in the company of others is very, very beneficial and highly recommended. So, in a few minutes, I'll take some questions. What I'd like to do before that is I wanted to show you all a 3.5 minute... Wait, hold on. Oh. Okay, thank you. Okay, I wanted to show you all a 3.5 minute video about a book that I wrote not too long ago. It's right over here. It's called Urban Monk. And yes, you can all turn around. And I wrote this book initially, you know, just as my own reflection. But it ultimately turned into a book because some friends suggested that I turn it into a book. So this 3.5 minute trailer is going to tell you why I wrote the book and a little bit about my journey that I've undertaken so far to come to where I am in my spirituality. So we can go ahead and play it. Thank you.
My name is Gadadhar Pandit Das, and the name of the book is Urban Monk, Exploring Karma, Consciousness, and the Divine. When most people think of what a monk is, the first thing that comes to their minds is, you know, mountain peaks, forests, a beautiful monastery in the middle of nowhere. I live surrounded by nightclubs, bars, tattoo shops, laundromats, subway stations, bus stations, and nonstop foot traffic. A lot of monks do live in the city for the purpose of helping others find a more balanced way to live. Every day I'm talking with people. I work as a religious life advisor or chaplain, and part of that responsibility involves talking to people, listening to them, listening to their problems, helping them come up with solutions to their problems, helping them lighten the load of all the difficulties that they're going through. I didn't write the book with the idea of publishing it. It started as a journal because I wanted to reflect on my own life. I decided to turn my journal into a book because I thought maybe that me sharing my story would inspire others to perhaps also turn towards spirituality in difficult times. The book goes through my own journey growing up in Southern California, where my parents lose their multi-million dollar business, which forces us to move to East Europe. Being so uprooted from my society and my culture and my lifestyle that I had in LA, it was a very difficult time, very uncertain time. And so I decided to explore the Bhagavad Gita, one of the main spiritual texts of India, to understand why all this is happening to me. Why am I suffering so intensely? And at that moment, the Bhagavad Gita really gave me the answers that I was looking for. It gave me solace. It actually gave me hope. A lot of times when people go through difficulties in their lives, we just become fixated on trying to fix the problem. Find a quick solution so the suffering goes away, so the pain goes away. However, that's not really getting to the core of the problem, which is deep within inside. One of the things I try to help people understand is the nature of their own mind, and that if we can actually nourish the mind, feed the mind through meditation, exercise the mind. Because when you meditate, the mind wanders and you know that it just went somewhere. Then you have to bring it back. And that bringing it back is an exercise. It's like, I like to think of it as push-ups for the mind. What I'm really hoping is that people will be inspired through this book to give their spirituality a serious chance, not only when they're struggling, but when things are good also. You know, just to keep it as much a part of their life as breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Make spirituality a part of the everyday experience.
So yes, I did grow up in Los Angeles. Thank you. So yeah, we're going to have questions, and you know, I'm selling my book here. I'll be here selling it for $15. If you like, I can sign them. And if there's any questions about what I said today, feel free to ask. We have like 5 more minutes, and we can take a couple questions. I thought you had a question. Thank you.
When you start comparing the stories of Ajamil and King Bharat, it's very interesting because it seems like what you do during a lifetime really doesn't matter. It's the last minute which is important, because Ajamil became so degraded, but he wasn't even remembering Krishna. And I was just thinking, hypothetically, if King Bharat had named his deer Narayan, and if he had called out, would he still have been liberated, because he was still attached to the animal?
I made it a rule to not address hypotheticals, because they can go in a million different ways. What if this and what if that and what if, because you know what I mean? So the point is, does it just matter if it's your the last moment and not the rest of your life? I don't think so. And ultimately, it's Krishna's mercy. He's a supreme, independent, free will Krishna has. He can save somebody even if they didn't seem to do anything their whole life. You could say, well, all right. No, I mean, it's Krishna, right? Like the king can pardon anybody if they want to. So why Krishna does some things, those are really up to Krishna. But and we also don't know how much spiritual life Ajamil did in his previous life. We don't know. Maybe that there's a whole bunch of stuff back there that combined with this was enough to take him back. Only Krishna knows the history of each individual soul. Okay. There's a question over here.
Thank you very much, Prabhu, for a very nice class. The story has actually reminded me of this one story that I think it was Giriraj Maharaj had given a class here, and he told us this one story about this brahmana who was living across the lake from a prostitute, and the prostitute and the brahmana had seen each other's lives. The brahmana would always look at the prostitute and say, oh, look at what she's doing now, and who's she with, and what is she into now, look at this, and then on the other end, she was always looking at him like, oh, my life is so sinful. He is such a great personality. You know, he's studying Shastra. He lives so piously. He knows so much about spiritual life. And me, I'm so degraded. And I think that the turn of it was that because the Brahmana, even though he was living such a, an externally pious life, but he was so, like, I guess, envious and aggressive towards another living being that he actually didn't get the end result of going back to Godhead. And then because the prostitute was so understanding of like the right state of consciousness one needs to be in, but she was just doing what she had to do to survive, she actually ended up getting liberation.
Yeah. Great story. Thank you. Yeah, to not judge others we don't know. Yeah. Wonderful. Anyone else have a question?
I have a question.
Oh, yes. Okay.
In regards to the story of Kim Bharat, you were mentioning that how risky and dangerous it could be. At the same time, you mentioned also that if he will have someone who could tell him enough compassion, maybe he will be out of trouble. So in that regards, what about someone who already knows, maybe heard the story 3, 4, 5, or 10 times, but still hasn't get it yet? How could you approach that issue without being judgmental, critical, or mind your own business, but still you feel the danger of that? And sometimes it's used as excuse. They say, well, you know, my children needs to be affectionate, and that's one way to gain affection.
I think that ultimately people have to make their own choices. You know, people know what to do or what not to do, and I think ultimately we have to let people make their own choices. And that's how I would address that. Like, you know, you can try to help, but helping shouldn't turn into like meddling into someone else's life or business. They're adults. Let them do what they want. The philosophy is all right here. We're all right here. And if someone chooses to do something else, maybe that's just where they're at. And if sometimes we interfere too much, it could push them further away. Better to sometimes leave people alone and let them take things at their own pace as they're ready. And that can sometimes be healthier, actually. One more, if there is. Hiding behind the Vyasasana.
Thank you so much for such a beautiful class.
Thank you.
And nice explanation on Krishna consciousness. I wanted to ask you, since you are traveling and doing a lot of preaching, you have seen a lot of advanced devotees also have difficulties. You know, they fall down. And many times they go through a lot of difficulties. And, you know, even Srila Prabhupada also helped them. Many times, you know, we have seen that in the past. So what are your views and what's your advice on that?
Advice on what? I can give views. I don't know if there's an advice that I can give here.
How we should approach when a senior devotee or even a neophyte falls down, and how we cannot be, you know, coached, or how we can be coached and helped.
Anytime anyone has difficulty, in my opinion, in their spiritual life, there's only one way to approach it. It's with a lot of compassion. Anything else is going to drive that person further away. We are not the judge. You know, nobody put us in charge of anyone else's spiritual life. And if anyone is having difficulty, because if we are showing compassion to them, then Krishna will show compassion to us, because these are his devotees still. Because they're devotees, it doesn't really matter. Not that it doesn't matter. We shouldn't be judging anyone, no matter what their situation is. We should only be seeing what we can do to help that individual. You know, and maybe it's not even our position. Maybe someone else has to do it. We don't know. But ultimately, compassion, care, kindness, forgiveness are the only ways that that person will stay connected to the society. Anything else is going to push them further and further and further and further away, until they never want to come back to another, to because of fear of judgment. So I feel compassion and kindness are the only way to really deal with those situations. Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki, Shri Rukmini Dwarkadish ki, Nitai Gaur Premanandi.